My friend Dr. Kevin Mosty here every Monday morning on the show, who has done a tremendous job on behalf of Central DuPage Hospital and Northwestern Medicine and making medicine a little more understandable to the rest of us. So thanks for taking some extra time here.
Oh, sure. No problem. Always enjoy talking to you.
So does that include the on-the-air stuff?
No. Not so much that.
All right. Couple of things. First off, people hear you all the time, but they don't necessarily know who you are as a person and things of that nature. So I don't know that we've ever talked about this. What got you interested in medicine?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. A lot of people say, oh, you know, so-and-so had this disease or so-and-so had that disease. And for me, it's a little different. Many of you might know a guy caddied as a young kid. And one of the great people I caddied for was a guy by the name of Dr. Tom Moore. And Tom was an internist at the old St. Anne's Hospital, and I caddied for him quite a bit. He was nice enough to ask for me, and we hit it off well. And at the time, he was trying to decide what to do. I was going to go into engineering, thinking about biomedical engineering. And he said, no, you got to go into medicine. And he just kind of, over a couple rounds of golf, talked to me about how impactful you can make in your life with it, how enjoyable it can be, how it's always changing, how you'll never, you know, nothing's the same. And he kind of talked me into it, to be honest with you, and I have him to thank for it.
And you got a scholarship through hard work as a caddy. You know, you and I always take time to plug this organization because we care so much about it. An organization that provides caddy scholarships that has helped not just you, but your brother and thousands of others get through college, right?
Absolutely. I mean, Western Golf Association, the Evans Scholars Fund, has been phenomenal to our family, and it's a life-changing scholarship. You know, the scholarship for me was 4 years at University of Kansas, which included everything except your book. So your housing was taken care of, your tuition was taken care of.
That's amazing.
Yeah. The expectation was that you got a job for your meals, so I cooked in a dorm for 4 years and offset that cost. But the nice thing was I left college with no debt.
Which no doctor has done since.
Well, yeah. Well, that it allowed me then to take debt for medical school.
Right.
But had I had a big debt coming out of undergrad, who knows what I would have done. I might have said, you know what, I'm going to work. And, you know, it might have dissuaded me a little bit.
Yeah, and this isn't about golf, but we're such fans of this organization that if you go to the Western Golf Association website or just Google Evans Scholars, and impart to your kids, boys and girls, how important it is and what a great summer job it is because they can end up getting college paid for.
Yeah. I always said I'm going to write a book about, you know, I got my MBA at University of Notre Dame, and I was going to write a book saying I learned more as a caddy than I did in my MBA, but I didn't think that would be a good thing to do for
even though it's true. All right. So
a lot of life's lessons as a caddy, which stick with you forever.
Let's break this down here a little bit by season, because we're in the holiday season now, and you told us last week on the regular show, if you could possibly weigh the same on New Year's Day as you did the day before Thanksgiving, you win. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, at this time of the year, our activity decreases quite a bit. We sleep more, we're not outside as much, we're not as active, and this is the time that we have comfort food. You don't go home and say, you know what, I'm going to have a sliced tomato and or a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. You know, you go home and you want meatloaf, and you want mashed potatoes, and you want these comfort foods that are heavy in calories. And it's because the body has been kind of said, okay, we're coming into winter, make sure you store up. You know, we don't need to do that, but we get away from some of those lighter foods and a lot less vegetables, and we get into these heavier foods and less activity. And that's just a recipe for putting on an extra 8.
Is it as simple as the amazing diet program I've been on, which is eat less, move more?
Yeah, that is the biggest thing that people don't get. You know, and we talked about diets in the past. You know, there's lots of diets out there. But really, it does come down to, does your activity equal what you take in? It's simple math. You expound enough energy, if you take in enough energy, they stay equal, then actually you can put on a little bit of weight because it's muscle weight versus fat, but you're going to feel a lot better as well.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it on the regular show, but it certainly is important to discuss here. We see more and more studies in the last month in particular about weightlifting and how much weightlifting may even pass cardiovascular work when it comes to burning fat. Do you subscribe to that?
Well, there's a couple things there. One, you know, weightlifting done properly is okay. It's going to help you with bone strength and it's going to help you with muscle strength. Cardiovascular-wise, you really have to be in a rapid training where you're changing and you're lifting weights constantly and moving through different stations so that you're using different muscles and not just the exact same muscles over and over. So it could get to a cardiovascular. It does help with bone strength, that's for sure, and it does help with muscle buildup versus fat.
So 4 5-pound curls and an hour off and then going back, is it really going to get it done?
It depends. Are those curls, is that like a chicken leg or a turkey leg?
Yeah, right, exactly. To your mouth and back.
Correct.
You're in a business that changes probably as fast as anything else in technology. What's the biggest change you've seen since you got in? Would it be as simple as, well, we have the internet now?
Yeah. You know, the internet has definitely been a change for patient-physician interactions, that is for sure. The patient now has the ability to be much more educated prior to coming in or going home and getting educated on a diagnosis, which allows them to do some homework as far as what should I be doing. We think that about 95% of what we tell a patient in an exam room, they forget before they get in their car. So we try to give after-visit summaries, paper, but really the most important thing is making sure they understand the illness. And then if you're going to use the internet, make sure we use reputable sources. If you're going to have heart disease, we want you to go to American Heart Association. We want you to go to the Mayo Clinic. We want you to go to WebMD. We don't want you to go to someone who says, I can cure heart disease if you eat enough kale. So we got to be careful about the internet, but it's important because it is a source of information.
Yeah, and honestly, there's an appearance to websites that have thump and those that don't. If you go to a website that looks like it's sort of slapped together, it's probably one you want to avoid when something is important as your health. Whereas if you go to something that has a deep dive on topics or interesting graphics and things of that nature, you're likely dealing with something that's a little more reputable. It's not always that simple, but those to me at least are keys.
Absolutely. We want to get to websites where we're using evidence-based medicine and that there's studies that back up what they say, that it's not my personal opinion that I am going to throw out there without any evidence behind it. So looking at the source of the information is probably just as important as the information itself.
Are we, you know, again, not about golf, but you and I know that even though the equipment through the years in golf has changed, we've all basically as amateurs shoot the same scores. And that hasn't. With the changes in technology and the changes in healthcare and the advancements we've made in cancer and other things, are those changes coming faster or are we just hearing about it more?
Yeah, you know what? It's very interesting what you said there about the change between equipment in golf and equipment in medicine. You know, the equipment in medicine has changed so dramatically. I mean, just in my short, 25-plus year career, just take a couple of examples. Stroke patients. When I was a resident at Lutheran General, if you got an admission at night for a stroke patient, it was very simple. You controlled their blood pressure, and you made sure that physical therapy and occupational therapy saw them the next day to teach them how to eat with their left hand and to teach them how to walk again. Now we're doing CAT scans in the, right outside the person's house, starting clot-busting drugs, if appropriate, at that point. They're coming in for a short hospitalization, and they're going back to work, or they're going back to playing golf. So when you talk about technology that way, when you talk about technology of surgery, where you used to have your appendix taken out, we used to make a big 4-inch cut to take out your appendix and cut through muscle. And now we put in 2 scopes and we yank it out and you don't even stay in the hospital. You go home.
Yeah, and the laser cancer work that Northwestern has done and have one of them, the great laser cancer setups forever. And you taught me about this, especially with kids with growing tissue. You want to be able to attack the tumor and not damage the surrounding tissue, and laser is a big part of that?
Yeah, proton therapy is probably one of the things that's probably the most exciting when we look at pediatric brain cancer. Pediatric brain cancer, obviously, very devastating. But now, before we used to do what we call whole brain radiation, where we would just irradiate the entire brain, and you'd hope that you hit the tumor as well. With the proton therapy now, it's going to the level of the tumor, expelling its energy and not damaging the tissue around it. So it's very important, and it's been unbelievable technology for pediatric brain cancer especially. We're starting to see some use in prostate cancer. We're starting to see some use in breast cancer. There's just not enough centers out there to get all the data out to show how much better it's going to be, except in a few cases.
Now, you're not old yet, but I'm getting there. And at some point, you and I won't be doing what we do now. And millennials who have come up and they've done the path that you took, and they've gone through med school and they've gone through a residency, they're going to be the next great doctors. Do we have enough of them? And is the attitude of millennials about medicine something that encourages you or concerns you?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of concerning for me from the whole generation, to be honest with you. So millennials, as far as the ones that are coming out and working and coming to work as doctors in medicine, and this is not a slam on any millennial doctors by any means, what they did is they saw what has happened over doctors in the past, and they also have been trained a different way. Right now they have an 80-hour work week as a resident. Well, before we used to say, you know, you'd come in, come in on Monday morning, you were on call Tuesday, Monday night, you went home Tuesday night, you came back Wednesday, you were on call Thursday, you went home. So our days and nights were 36 hours
right. Often.
Those days are gone. They don't allow that to occur anymore. That has kind of, I think, set a tone for when millennials come out. They're more focused actually on doing great medicine at an appropriate time, but then making sure they have personal time as well. So they're not really looking for money and focus and big time. They are saying, hey, we're very content to work a specific amount of time and make a specific amount of money.
Is that okay? Or is it unrealistic knowing what you know about the demands of being a doctor?
Well, it's okay as long as you have enough of them. But
right.
You start to do the math and the math doesn't work. Right. So the doctor who says, well, I'm going to take a call, but then I'm not going to work the next day. Well, then you need to have someone to fill those shoes. So,
right.
And we're really starting to, unfortunately, I think, see some of the older doctors get to a point of being burned out and telling younger people, go into business, go into technology, don't go into medicine right now. There's that little bit of tension there. And then, you know, with the millennials, it's kind of interesting. The patients, as patients themselves, they want care now. They don't want to be disrupted in their work time or their personal time. So you're starting to see them using more convenient care for their primary
right.
care and not as much prevention and screening as we would hope that would happen.
Well, and the cost is, of course, a big part of that, too, and that drives the cost up when you're going to a convenient care as opposed to planning things out with your doctor. So I want to get into healthcare in a second, but you mentioned burnout. Now, you've done this, as you said, for a generation. How do you avoid burnout? And for all the doctors that you manage, and we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of doctors who you have to oversee. What's the status of burnout now? Are you seeing less of it than you did when you got in, more, or is it the same?
No, we're seeing a lot more. Unfortunately, we're seeing a lot more. I mean, here at CDH, we have 1,300 doctors on the medical staff, and I can tell you there's rarely a day goes by where someone doesn't walk in and said, you know what, I've had it. I've had it up to here with this, 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 and this. Let me go back to when we were kids, Steve, and you would go to your primary care, you go to your family doc for your checkup and
right.
for your shots. He would pull out a little 3x5 card, says Steve Cochran on it. He'd scribble some notes that he knew what it meant. He would put that card down. He would take care of you. He would look you in the face. He'd answer all your mom's questions and send you on your way. Now what happens? Now we have these electronic medical records where my back, unfortunately, is to the patient, because my typing skills are not as great as they should be.
Right.
I'm spending more time filling out insurance forms. I'm trying to decide that I think I know what's right for the patient versus an insurance company saying, no, we're going to tell you what's right.
Right. You have to actually dance around their insurance company who didn't go to medical school and manipulate things at times. You see this all the time. A lot of people listening, I'm sure, have seen it themselves. Manipulate the care as a doctor, which I assume you didn't have to do in the past.
Correct. So you can see how frustrating it gets as a physician to a point
right.
of they're like, I'm not even taking care of patients anymore. And if they need to take care of as many, they're doing medical records till 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night.
Yeah. Well, my daughter, you know, at 31, and you like Amy much better than me, and who doesn't,
yep. mm-hmm.
But works with kids with autism, and half of her day is insurance paperwork. And, you know, she's 31. She's just getting in.
Yeah, the business side of this has just gotten to be ridiculous, and it's not going to change. You know, margins are tight for everybody. Hospitals are very expensive places to run. So if there's you know, we've heard this thing, the saying, no margin, no mission. You know, we have a mission to give the best care we can to those in our community. And in order to do that, the community expects, hey, we have a new technology. Why don't we have it here? And it's one of those where in some communities you have it, and in other communities you don't, which is a big issue across this country.
Yeah, and we're going to run out of time here because I know you've got a bunch of things you need to jump to. But that access of care and the diversity of access to care, you can have the best medical facilities in the world in Chicago and literally blocks away. You can have somebody that could be dying in the street and is homeless and is not getting the treatment they need medically. What do we do about that?
Yeah, this is probably the thing that we have to figure out a way to do it, because it's not something you can do globally. It's each community has to figure this out, but there has to be support for it. You know, what happens here in Metro Chicago is totally different than rural Nebraska. But the social determinants of health, you'll probably hear that saying over and over again, is so important. We talk about prevention on your show. You know, we talk about the importance of a colonoscopy, you know, to prevent you from, you know, finding cancers early. But what we don't look at is look at the other things that we're not focusing on because they're not health related. What about housing? What about nutrition and food? What about something as simple as transportation? I can easily tell a patient, I have an appointment for you. It's at this time at this office. If that patient has no access to transportation and the buses don't run that way, they're not going to go there. We would be much better off spending money on housing, low-cost housing for individuals who can't afford it, make sure we have food sources for them so that their nutrition is kept up. If we did that, we would see a much better decrease in our neonatal intensive care unit, because we know the malnutritioned mother is the one who's causing this problem. Or I shouldn't say that, not causing this problem, but is having that issue.
That's the link.
Yeah, and housing. You know, people that are living on the street, they're not getting preventative care. They're not getting their blood pressure taken care of, their mental health, and we're paying for it in the end.
Yeah, it's the old adage, and you've said it a million times to me, you can pay now or you can pay later. It does all come down to money. It is a business, but the difference is what you do every day in medicine can't be specifically concerned about money first and the patient second. You know that, I know that, but it's harder and harder for doctors to do that. So if you can carve out a little time for us next time, maybe we can get into the health insurance piece of this and we can talk about prescriptions and why they're so expensive and things of that nature, so they can get a little deeper dive than we're able to contribute time to in the midst of the regular show. As your schedule clears up in some way, maybe we can do that.
Absolutely. You know, I also come down to if we all did our fair share.
Yep.
If everyone did their fair share, this burden for what we see out there as health concerns would be so much lower. You know, we could talk about hospitals and the ability for them to take care of those without insurance. It happens. We do it every day here at CDH. We do it every day at every hospital across the country. But what we're saying is, instead of taking care of this person who comes into the emergency room, what can we do in the community to make sure that they have the health that they deserve and the housing and things that we all take for granted, unfortunately, come back to hurt us.
Yeah, everybody needs to step up. There's a million ways to do it. You know how much I appreciate the time and your expertise, and you make this stuff much clearer for all of us. So the Steve Cochran podcast for now complete, but we'll do it again soon. And, of course, every Monday morning you join us as well. I don't know that we, in the 30 seconds we have left, I don't know that we ever explained what you actually do when you're not doctoring. Is it administrative with all the doctors you handle?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I do. I try to make sure that the 1,300 doctors we have here behave nicely to each other and to patients, which is very simple when you have the great medical staff that I have. But, yeah, I wish it was as simple as just herding cats, but there's other things.
Some cats are more difficult than others.
Some cats are. The other thing we need to talk about sometime is just how you and I and Spike Odell, that we started all this.
Yeah, no, I do want to get into that because Spike lost the bet. and by the way, real quick, get a plug in for Marion Joy, because that's under your umbrella now, too.
Yeah, it is interesting. People, Marion Joy Rehabilitation Hospital out here in Wheaton, it's a fascinating place. I'm very fortunate to be the chief medical officer there as well as at CDH now. And it is a place where you talk about walking into a place and seeing hope and seeing The impact that they make on people's life is amazing. The interesting thing is a lot of people say, oh, it's a rehabilitation hospital, therefore it must be a drug and rehab hospital, when in fact it's just the opposite. These are patients, these are individuals who had strokes, who have had brain injuries, who have had severe trauma. And what we do at Mary and Joy is we get them back to a quality of life where they're active. We teach them how to walk again. We take stroke patients. We take spinal cord patients and make sure that their lives can be as great as they possibly can. And the phenomenal work that they do, and Steve, I got to get you out there for a good tour, because yeah, the phenomenal work that they do with the physiatrist, the therapist, and the nurses there is just blows me away.
Yeah, no, they're amazing. And yep, I've seen parts of the facility at different times and happy to help each year with the fundraising. But I'm telling you, every time you turn a corner at Mary and Joy, you find somebody else that's making miracles every day. So thanks for all that as well.
Yeah, just the hope that you see on the patient's face and the encouragement that the staff is giving these patients, so much different than the acute care hospital that we see here. We do hope and encouragement here, but we're taking care of acute problems where these people are saying, we're going to get you back to where you were, and they do a great job.
Northwestern Medicine, I know they understand all the good that you do in communicating medicine all the time with us. So thanks, Doc. I appreciate it, and look forward to talking to you every Monday morning on The Steve Cochran Show at 6:40.